Welcome to another episode of the After the Whistle podcast. My name is Smiley and I'm joined by Vangelda and Crack. It's been a good week, so as you can see me, I'm in very high spirits. I don't know about a certain person from Chelsea, but for we the United people, we are Charlie, very much in good spirits.
And also so the last week.
I think I start with Crack. Crack, how you like, it's been a while.
Every weekend, you know, something day you pack, most of them you do, you pass put weekend and so Charlie. And it happens, you know, if you record, either you tire, you don't come out late or anything, but it's good to be back. Make people not make you look like, because we win against Liverpool, it's not even about that. We discussed it way before the match, and I said I was going to be available on Monday. It was yesterday, I still had a family event to be at. So you go fit to your face some styles, we don't care. It'd be coincidence. We talk for it, we get evidence. Smiley, you can put the screenshot today of the time you send the message. Make people not say, then what Corey was saying, make people not say, it not be agenda, it be facts. So yeah, it's good to be back.
So the whole thing we say, it's just a nice coincidence that somehow United beats Liverpool way, the stars align where we come back. So Charlie, anyway, Vangelda, how you doing?
Hello to our listeners, and it's good to be back. And it's single, but for days, so I did.
Even we self, we don't know it. I'm not going to ask what they do, but get to us soon.
Anyway, thank you.
So anyway, we have so much to talk about. So best place to start, and the reason why I'm in such high spirits, is because Man United beats Liverpool 2-1 at Anfield on Sunday. Now, it's the first victory for United at Anfield since the Louis van Gaal era. So like, it's been a while. I think it's been almost 10 years or something. So Charlie, it's been a while since we saw something like this. But obviously, it's gotten a lot of conversations going. And particularly, the most interesting thing I've seen is that Liverpool fans seem to be very fed up with Arne Slot. And a lot of them are actually asking for him to be sacked. And as a Man United fan who has been fed up with Ruben Amorim for the longest time and see my fellow Man United fans saying that, oh no, we should give him time, this, that. It's very interesting to see a team that has a title-winning manager asking for him to be fired just about 2 months into the season. So make us start with Crack. Liverpool fans, like, first of all, are Liverpool in crisis? Because they've lost 4 games in a row.
If you are telling me you are in crisis, you've lost 4 games in a row and you are still sitting 4 points from first place. And we are barely, 8 games into the season, shouting for a coach that won the Premier League, that prior to the season has lost a combined of 4 games or so for you in all competition. And you are calling for him to be sacked. I think it's a new coup to just be doing that. They're just in their feelings, shouting a lot. I'm not disagreeing with their complaints in the sense that the coach has had it wrong a couple of times with their formation. I remember I didn't have the podcast when they signed Isak and all, but I remember talking about it. I saw a tweet about somebody saying that Liverpool is not a team that is built for, like, it's not built to be a star-studded 11. Because it's built on the grit. Like, if you watch from, let's see, what's the name? Klopp, right? Even Klopp faced some issues with Mane and Salah. Because both were so good, they were competing the same team, blah, blah, blah. He still managed it. But you do realize that they are not a team that they are supposed to have more than 5 stars, because they are built, they traditionally have high work rate, work for each other. You have people that sit on the bench, like RIP Diego Jota. Whether he starts or not, he doesn't mind. He's going to come put in a shift. Slot came, still managed to win with them. I mean, City was in disarray, Arsenal bottle, blah, blah, blah. But once they signed Isak, when I saw the tweet, it made sense that they were going to have trouble. And I also replied to that tweet and I alluded to it that, yeah, I don't think they needed Isak after what Kitiki has showed them in the first couple of matches, because the guy scored in his first match, scored in his second match. He was banging. Like, he was really banging. The team was clicking. Like, he knew he was going to be the starting nine. Everything was close. He can play from out wide, anything. But they signing Isak, it was like just to spite everyone. Because, yeah, they've spoken with him. They made commitment. They have the money. They want to go for him no matter what. Forgetting that the big dog Salah too will have to eat. Isak will have to eat. No 90 million player will be comfortable sitting on the bench and not knowing what to do. You've already bought a 120 million player, attacking midfielder that is already not seen top. So right now, what's your formation going to be? 4-3-3, 4-2-3-1, which is going to be on the bench. Why are you going to play Isak right now? Isak is not in form, but traditionally, you have to be patient with him. Because you have another 90 million player that you bought, that is already, he had already hit the ground running, that is not suffering right now. You put him on the bench and starting Isak no matter what, and him, and you even started him in a cup competition, he still banged 2 goals. All right, so it's making it look as if it's looking like a wrong decision that Isak is supposed to be the number nine when the striker you bought is not bad. It's not like this is the situation of their old striker, was in it? Nunu Milk. You understand? Like, everybody knew Nunes can come in bang 2 goals.
Nunes.
But everybody knew Nunes is not supposed to start. This is not... Ekitike is very good. He is hard to dispose of the ball, you know. That is the kind of player that EPO teams need and a team like Liverpool need. Because he brings Salah into play, helps Salah as well and all those. But right now, it looks like Salah hasn't started the season well. So Salah too has to find his feet. But right now, I'm finding my own too. I have to be looking for the striker. It's going to look selfish. You understand? There's been times where it looks like Salah is disinterested in the team because the build-up is all some way, right? But I don't agree with calling the coach to be sacked. And also, I don't think Slot has dealt with big stars like this coming from Feyenoord. What he came to meet last season, he came to meet a team that is already motivated. He came into a team that people weren't really familiar with Slot. Right? He came, not so much change, continued what this guy was doing, Klopp was doing before he left, played the same formation, put the players at the right place, trusted Gakpo, trusted the winger they sold to Bayern Munich. Right? Trusted him, trusted Gakpo, rotated well. Javier Elliott came back from injury, was playing. Everything was clicking for them. Everything was clicking for them last season. And I said, teams were generally down, City and the rest. Arsenal bottled it, and I'll still continue to see Arsenal bottled it. They could have put on a huge title challenge. But yeah, he got it. This season, I don't think he was entering the season thinking he was going to get 2 cool strikers in Isak and Ekitike, and also Florent to get 120 million, 90 and 140 or whatever. Yesterday, you played Sabolai as number 10. How is Sabolai your most advanced attacking this one against United? Why? It was because if you are going to play Sabolai, play 4-3-3. Why are you playing 4-2-3-1 over there? There was a huge gap in midfield for both teams. And I don't know if people realize Liverpool soon, but there was a gap in midfield for Liverpool as well, just like United. Gravenberg did what he had to do, but Batman already had a head injury, so his head was gone in the game. So, yeah, so I don't agree with Liverpool fans calling the sack. It's too early. It's too early.
Van Gelder, Liverpool, do they have a problem? Like, 4 games
They have a big problem. They have a massive problem. And the earlier they admit that they have a problem, the better it will be for them. Look, they've not started the season well. Even when they were winning, I remember saying that they've not moved me. Yes, winners find ways to win, but they were not playing well. I think the last episode we recorded with Fred, I kept making that point. That you're not playing well, somehow you're finding a way to win. But at some point, that luck is going to run out. And now it has come to an end. They are not playing well. They've got their defense is not good. They've tried to replace Robertson with Kerkez, who I've just always said he's not good. As for Frimpong, Frimpong is Frimpong, we all know. But for some weird reason, even though Frimpong is back fit, they've just decided to stick with Connor Bradley. Virgil van delegates to they do what he they do best. Every day they delegate. Where the other guy to, you know, good. Kunate. He to, you know, good. I don't know, say they play for new contract. I don't know what's going on there. We warned you people about this Gavin Bridge guy. You people say we shouldn't say it. We'll say it. We'll see it. And the whole world will know that the truth was spoken. Their team is basically unbalanced. For a team that does not have a proper defensive midfielder, to have spent 400 and something million on attacking talent, that's just poor squad planning, in my opinion. They needed one, after they bought Verts, they didn't need both Ekitike and Isak. And I'm of the, yes, I get the idea, having, you know, almost like a Drogba and Anelka kind of a situation where you have two very good strikers and they will kind of like compete with each other and force each other to score. The problem is that one of them is hungrier than the other. Isak has wanted this big move. He's got his big move. I'm not saying he doesn't want it to work or he's not going to work hard for Liverpool and be successful there. But signing Ekitike first meant that by signing Isak, Ekitike will be hungrier than Isak. But then Isak being the most expensive signing in the history of the Premier League also then means that the coach will be forced to play Isak ahead of Ekitike. And that is to the detriment of the team right now. After the Chelsea game, I fully expected that he will make certain changes and bring in a couple of, you know, maybe play Frimpong ahead of Bradley because the Bradley guy, you know, good. And probably start Ekitike ahead of Isak. Just take Isak out of the limelight just a little, right? Let Ekitike start and then let's see what they go on for that side. But for some weird reason, for four matches, you've done the same thing and you keep losing and you keep doing the same thing. There's a definition for that thing. It's insanity. And I genuinely believe they are in big trouble because by the time they will find balance in their defense, midfield and attack, the two people ahead of them, Manchester City and Arsenal, may have run away with it. I genuinely believe so. They have to fix something and they have to fix it fast. I don't know if Arne Slot has the tools to do it. It's a very different proposition to come into a settled squad and use them to win a league. It's a different proposition to take a non-settled a squad that doesn't have natural connections as they used to with your some of the people within your spine now far along in age. Because me, that would be the only thing I go fit take Salah in form put down to EB age. I know the one talk say Shamati. The fuck he the play, no. It's a big problem.
Is it not the case of the big contracts? Because we saw something similar happen with Aubameyang. We saw something similar with Ozil. Like, if players sign new big contracts, no, they're down to Rashford and things. So,
no, EBH. I don't want to talk EBH. I don't want to talk that one. Before then, we can't talk say they hit on them my money. So EBH, he's aging. That is why he's not doing. But I do believe that Liverpool are in a crisis. Anybody that thinks they're not is not looking at the things critically. Your £150 million player, whatever Virgil money be, is not performing. He's not performing. I think is it 10 matches? No goal, no assist. That's damning, man. That's damning. And yeah, I get. But a lot of people say, he needs time to settle. The very, very best of players actually don't need time to settle. You're good. And that's it. You know, but you still can't write them off because at some point we expect them to come good. But at this moment, as we're speaking, Monday, the 20th of October, Liverpool are in a crisis and they better sit up and fix it fast.
But I mean, I get that is a major problem when you're losing four games in a row and all of that. But is it not a bit too premature? Because they've gone through a huge transition period. Some might say it's an unnecessary transition period, because when you're a title-winning team, you don't need to do too many changes. You don't need to do the level of changes that they made. But regardless, they've signed two big money strikers. They've signed Verts. They signed a new left back. Trent has left. They've signed a new right back. So that's a lot of change to adjust to. So is it not like the natural adjustment period that they are going through?
A natural adjustment period might happen, but that normally will be expected to happen at the very, very, very beginning. Not after 5 matches where you've won the 5 or 1-4 and drawn 1 or whatever it is that their record was after the first 5 games. Right? And the other problem is that when you watch them play as a football club, all phases of play is very, very, very disjointed. Their defense, they don't know how to build up. And I know this is very crazy to say, but Liverpool can't seem to figure out how to build up. They don't know whether to go long or come short, because there's nobody showing for the pass. And this is where their bigger players and more experienced players, such as Virgil van Dijk, such as Mo Salah, must step up and be counted. Do you understand? When the coach has prepared a formation or a tactic or whatever, you've started the game, the first 10, 15 minutes, you are realizing it's not going well. You are experienced enough and you have enough credits in the bank to bend that tactic and do something different. Just a little bit. What they do, they can't keep the ball. They can't defend transitions. They can't seem to attack. They can't seem to create chances for Isak. They can't seem to even find Isak in the first place. So, yes, you might say it's normal pains of a team that is settling into their new players. But you have something working. I don't want to say that it's immediately Isak started joining starting 11 and then they started looking this disjointed, because the midfield was already disjointed when, even without Isak, when it was just Ekitike, there was already a big problem. I remember the game, the first game against Bournemouth, the 4-2, the amount of space, acres of space that Gravenberch has to defend by himself. The problem also is that you hear Arne Slot and then you hear Gravenberch themselves speak, and then you hear that Gravenberch has been told to do a lot more attacking work. Kind of like bomb forward a lot more. Why? It's not like you have a maverick of a midfielder of defensive midfielder there that Gravenberch can bomb on and go and join the attack. You've not figured that bit out. You forgot to sign one of those players. So if you've not done that, you stick to what works. Let Gravenberch sit. Let him screen and protect the back four. And then let McAllister and Szoboszlai or McAllister and Kronyadi, he, for instance, has to be benched. I don't know what midfield connection they are going to make. But if Vert is not playing well, McAllister is not playing, just bench them and play Gravenberch with Szoboszlai as a midfield too. And then pull Ekitike behind Isak. Let Ekitike and Isak play together. Somehow, because of how good they are, they may figure something out up top. You know, I saw a video where they said that Slot this season is like Ancelotti 2 years ago last year at Real Madrid. I have these attacking stars. So let's just find some way and get the ball to them and then leave it to them and let them do what they have to do. But the way the Premier League is set up this season and the way the Premier League is evolving, you can't just use that kind of tactic to try and win games. It won't work. Teams will game out and plan. Yesterday's game came out complaining. United always play with Jesco.
Jesco always starts. Right now, they can't face Liverpool.
That's so stupid. That is such a stupid excuse. And I know some people might say, oh, maybe you're taking it out of context or whatever. Damn the context. You can't tell me that as a manager of a big club, you can't anticipate that opponents will change their tactics and the way they play when they face you. You are the damn champions.
Forget that one, Sif.
They know what they are doing. And I think some of these coaches say this ridiculous things to draw attention to themselves and what they say to take pressure off their team, right? And I believe that because I don't think it's that dumb enough to genuinely believe that teams aren't supposed to game plan for a particular team when you are the better team. We came as underdogs. Bro, we've not won in your home ground for 9 years. Our best is always a draw. All right, for 9 years now. And we are coming to your place where we know that one. You guys thrive on the press. You do well on the press. And you have two huge defenders at the back that aerial balls. Nobody. So what we are going to do is we'll kick along and we'll fight for the second balls, which work for us. Because once it comes on the ground, our players are strong enough to battle. Cunha, Mbeumo, Mount, Casemiro, and Bruno, they're aggressive enough to jump on you. Right? And even Ahmad is an excellent ball winner. People might not give him that record, but he's an excellent ball. He's smart enough. So why can't we game plan for you like that? Bruh, we've even used, under Mourinho, we used a game plan where Lukaku will knock it down to Rashford. But that time, we knew Lukaku was strong enough and good in the air to battle Van Dijk and the rest. So all this thing...
See, Craig, sorry, but look, the thing you said is so ridiculous to me because, no offense here, I don't even think United were brilliant. United were good and they were 100% deserving to win the game. For Manchester United to come to Anfield, not be brilliant, just be good, just be competent, and look like they absolutely had to win that game and deserve to win that game, you can't tell me it's not a problem. It's a very, very, very big problem. And if you're a coach, you should be worried. Not because it's Man United. The point I'm making is a team didn't have to be absolutely brilliant.
No, when
to
they actually
look like they deserve to win.
Can you guys hear me?
They just had to be competent, to be good.
When it actually comes to these matches, you don't have to be brilliant though. Luck plays a role. Game plan plays a role. Right? We played Liverpool where we've been absolute brilliant, stuck to everything. They still found a way to come back. We played against Liverpool where 40 minutes, we defended well, stuck to our playing. They scored the first goal, 43rd minute. We ended up losing by 7. All I'm saying is that we played Liverpool when they were languishing in midfield, in mid-table. Ferguson was still struggling to beat them. So when it comes to these rivalry matches and these matches, I don't really want to stick to, United had to be brilliant, dominant. No. I hear you. I understand that point where you're saying that United weren't overly impressive to do that. But per our form and what you've seen, to us, were impressive. Liverpool this season has been shaky. They concede a lot. Also, throughout the game, when they attacked, even when they came back, we knew that United would still get a chance to either worry them at a cause they've been fragile at the back. And that's why Roy Keane was like, Virgil van Dijk, it starts with you. Look in the mirror. Because if you are complaining about you consider weak goal with the Maguire, like defending, blah, 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 and all those. Bro, the first goal, you were jogging back. It has been, everybody saw you are supposed to marshal the back. I agree with you when I say that, yeah, they haven't been at their best and United didn't have to be excellent to win. But bro, if you really relax and see, you realize that United executed a game plan well. And for the first time, when we jump into that, I'll talk about my keeper, but let's not go there.
In fact, since you brought that one up, me, if I even won't ask, because now that you've brought up United being good and executing game plan and all of that, Krakwega, I ask you, have United turned the corner? Because finally, after almost a year, Ruben Amorim has won back-to-back league games. So, and if you're looking at things, he's beaten Liverpool, he's beaten Chelsea, albeit with 10 men. So, is this a sign that, Charlie, things have changed?
Personally,
Amorim out.
Because, truth be told, Amorim does well in the big matches. The players turns up in the big matches. It's always a matches against the bottom teams or the mid-table teams that we always have a head loss. So I want us to actually have a good record where 7 wins, we lose 2, something crazy like that. It's like 10 games, we go on a winning streak. Like, we have a team capable of that. So I wouldn't think we've turned a corner. It's just crazy that in 8 matches, we've played Liverpool, Arsenal, Chelsea, like, do you get it? In Man City, you understand? In this one, and Man City, we lost woefully. So I'm a simple guy. Give me a win, I will jump. Because we've been starving. We've been starved of win. So give me a win, I'll be happy. I'm a United fan. I love the team. There's nothing I can do. I'm not going to hate. I'm not going to a match wishing that I'm worrying us to lose. Also, the old man Jim, I said he's going to stick with him. I don't think we've turned the corner. We are just enjoying this win because we are taking it a game at a time. And because it's Liverpool and they banter and they were so sure they were going to smash us. They were going to use us to recover, blah, blah, blah. Everything around it, surrounding it, is beautiful for us too because we've suffered. We've not won in Anfield in 9 years. He's the first coach in 5 seasons to win at the Etihad and Anfield. He has done well. But then again, he's also the first coach that has broken a lot of records at United as well. So I don't think we've turned the corner. I just want us to go on a streak because we are playing once a week for crying out loud. We are playing once a week. We should be winning matches. We should not be losing to Brentford and Saints by 3 goals. Like, that's wild. Do you get it? We shouldn't be. We should actually be smashing teams. Just, if not even smashing teams. If we go, as I said, if 5 games, we win 4, lose 1, or even win 3, draw 1, lose 1, it's something that is going to be encouraging, but not yet. Not yet. Our first back-to-back win in over a year.
You know, like you were saying, United tend to do well in the big games under Amorim. And that one, you can't always chalk it down to the manager because big games, like, the motivation comes from within. The players, certain players, they just turn up for the big games. I don't even want to divert, but like Black Stars, for example, you see how they play in World Cup qualifiers as against AFCON qualifiers. Because like that one, the motivation, the coach doesn't even need to say much. They're not going to motivate them about this. So like me, I would honestly be more impressed with United if maybe in the big games with a draw against Chelsea and Liverpool that we beat. We probably drew against them. And then instead, we're beating the Brentfords and the Bournemouths and those other mid-table teams. Because under Amorim, those are the teams that have given us the most problems. The mid-table teams. Those teams that are just fighting to sneak into Europa, Crystal Palace, those teams. But beating the big teams or playing well against the big teams, I don't think it tells us much about who we are. So that's really, like you're saying, I don't believe that anything has changed yet. I'm still looking. And like you said, Sir Jim has already said that he's given Amorim 3 years. So whether I ball or no ball, the guy gets 3 years. I'm not going to be here hoping that we lose, then something will happen. Like, Charlie, once he's here, I'll try and make the best of what we have. But just briefly on the Liverpool thing, Ekitike Isak, that problem, I'll just say that Liverpool, they put themselves in a difficult position. They put themselves and Isak in a difficult position because I think, I truly don't believe that they went into the window trying to sign 2 strikers for over £90 million. I think the plan was to get one person. But because the Isak deal was delaying, and I think at some point everybody thought it was not going to happen, they went on to their plan B. And then when the Ekitike thing happened and then the Isak window opened again, it was kind of like, okay, Isak, we forced you to burn all your bridges at Newcastle. Now we can't leave you hanging. We forced you to do all of this. So like, I think it was a difficult position that they were in and they just decided that, okay, we've gotten Ekitike and we've also made a lot of money in sales. So maybe we just bring Isak to and then see how it goes. But I don't think it will ever be a good idea to sign 2 strikers in one window for £90 million. And I tweeted it today. Liverpool fans, they come talk plenty. And I'm just laughing in my head because if it was Chelsea who went and signed 2 strikers for £90 million in one window, like that one, then go understand the problem. If it be United self, we go do that thing. Then go understand why it's not a good idea.
Liverpool fans can see the problem of everybody's team except their own.
Exactly.
And that's one of their biggest problems. Them then Arsenal fans get some way, They have the best players in every position. That be hard than the Martin. We have the best in every position.
Trent was the best right back in the world until he said he wanted to go to Real Madrid. Right now, they said this guy, he don't even know how to defend in position.
There's Bradley at
people,
home.
I think generally people forget how terrible the world of France are. Because they've been in a gulag for a long time. People don't know how, like how annoying Liverpool fans are.
Anyway. It's a of Manchester United, yeah. I do agree with you guys. Because even if you watch yesterday's game, there was, bro, why every time Bruno Fernandes did do that thing, he left that big gap, make Casemiro, he chopped 84 million thousand years, make Ipe cover like the space midfield. Bro, teams use three midfielders to cover the space that they leave for Casemiro to cover alone. And it's like, either he doesn't see,
no, let me tell you, or something,
he refuses,
right,
to see. Make commitment.
You know, the idea is different from the execution. The reason why I'm saying that is, with the kind three center backs he's playing, right? One of the center backs is supposed to move into midfield. He doesn't have Martinez. Martinez is the only defender in our setup that can actually push into midfield and cover up in midfield, because he has experience playing DM. And so, So let me finish.
But that's a problem. If you set up if you set up a tactic, you have only one talent that can do that work with your defender to do. And that talent too is not, he does injure nowadays.
He sacrifices Euro for sure. That is the problem. Do you get it?
And that's the thing. So fundamentally, what you're saying is you don't have enough players good enough to play the way your manager wants to play.
The manager should have
changed the way
a central midfielder
in order that he can utilize better.
He should have signed one. It's just not about that. We still had an opportunity. Let me tell you something, right?
This formation he plays with points. Bruno.
And Casemiro to not work. That's why when Smiley was saying that, have we turned the corner? No, we haven't. Because it's even the small teams that have exposed us. I'm surprised that Liverpool, even Liverpool yesterday said they were finding spaces, but they were hitting the bar, they were hitting the woodwork. Their shots, for some reason, were going this one. Hey, you understand? The issues are still there. Bruno jumps. Smiley, how many times have we not complained about this in the group chat? Even he has identified it. He has said, Bruno is not positionally sound. You still play him there. Even Bruno has alluded to the fact that his best matches has been with him playing closer to the goal, playing at his best position, number 10. You are still forcing him there. At this point,
Bruno now talking, hey, I shall for this position.
Because you have no reason not to rotate.
But I'm saying,
No,
wait. Hey, Smiley,
let's move on from this. Let's come back home to Ghana.
The
Black Stars have secured qualifying.
I know say you know they go church, right? I know say you know they go church. But Van Gelder, are you familiar with the Book of Lamentations, right? Familiar with how, Jeremiah, the premise of that book talks about, suffering, how the people of Judah were treated, and how, no matter what, you should pray, trust in God, take your sorrows and issues and all, you come through to you and all this. And for years, we had Onana. We went to get Turkish Mafia. If you Turkish national team, they get some catch. These were our two keepers.
Mbayandir.
Our third keeper is old enough to bond all of us by the youth football age. We were always lamenting. United France, we're always lamenting.
Yeah.
We're crying. Some black people even became racist. And the book of, my God. Right now, we started the hashtag, my keeper is a white man. I'm mentioning
him.
My keeper should be white. Imagine, we suffered and lamented. We lamented to God and cried out to God. Let me finish. God listened to us and brought us sending laments
We lamented a goal of mess.
He who is broken hearted, come to Jesus now.
Hey, God. Hey, Nyami.
Thank you.
I remember Kawawa saying that black goalkeepers are not good, and I was fighting. I said, Kawawa, you are racist. I said, Kawawa, you hate your own people. But you know what? I've seen some black goalkeepers, and I
honestly,
goalkeeping is an art reserved for a particular.
If blasters, we serve like we go get white man make catch for we. I don't like.
That's all I can say.
Anyway, because, speaking of black stars, we secured qualifications to the World Cup over the past international break.
Can't say same for some people.
And the conversation immediately switched to some prodigal sons who are suddenly talking about wanting to come into our food, and namely Benjamin, I can't talk Benjamin Nketiah. Eddie Nketiah and Callum Hudson Odoi. In fact, Hudson Odoi, because namely say we could not call him Odoi. He said Odoi. So the whole conversation over the past week has been about how suddenly those two players have expressed their willingness to come back into the Black Stars food ahead of the World Cup. And it's triggered a lot of conversation, particularly because in the past, we know that we've approached them. We've tried to get them to come and play for us. Callum Hudson-Odoi, he's actually played for England before. I think he made one cap for them like in 2019 or something, back when he was good. Eddie Nketiah too, I think he was called up, but I'm not too sure whether he played. But the whole point is that they are eligible to play for Ghana, and now they are very much willing to play for Ghana. But it's caused a lot of conversation, a lot of controversy, because it's a very split and polarizing conversation, because there's one camp that is firmly saying that these players should not be brought back into our fold under any circumstances. There's others who are saying that, okay, these guys, they can bring something that we don't have. They can make us better. So we should consider it. So let me start with Van Gelder, because Callum Hudson-Odoi is an ex-Chelsea player. So you are very familiar with him and his story. Do you think the Black Stars should consider? I'm not even saying they should automatically call him up just because he's made himself available. But do you think the Black Stars should consider calling up Callum Hudson-Odoi and Eddie Nketiah?
The Black Stars should consider calling up everybody that's eligible to play. Anybody that's eligible to play in good standing, very good player, should be considered. Out of consideration, they will go to consider everybody. As to whether they should actually be called, it should be based on merit, improvement to the team, and something that will not disrupt team cohesion. I believe that that's a very important step. Like, of all the pain points of this Black Star squad, of all the pain points of this coaching staff and everything, it seems finally, and it looks like they are all on the same page. I'm not going to get fooled by AFCON World Cup qualifiers and whatnot, because it's the same team that couldn't make it to the AFCON. In December, I have to be going to the office and be watching my Nigerian colleague throw me every single day that we are not there. So it is a big problem for me, right? But at least now it seems like there's a good mix and balance from the technical side, you know, the coach, the assistant coaches, the set piece coach, who seems to be making a kind of effect on the play, especially from set piece perspective, goalkeepers coach, and all of those things. This technical director guy, the older German guy, I don't know his name, who've all come together, seem to be working well together and throwing a variance of ideas at Otuado, who is also doing his best and implementing them. And we are seeing a certain level of variance in the play of the Black Stars. It even reflects in the kind of players that he has called up lately. There's a lot more balance to the Black Stars squad that he calls nowadays, and a lot less noise around it. right? And then on the field of play, it seems like, you know, I read an article, or I watched a video of a senior journalist, Godfrey Akotubafo, talking about the fact that, you know, Jordan might be the captain that we needed, that we didn't know we needed. But obviously, since he's become captain, you can tell that there's a lot less friction and animosity between camps in the Black Stars. And the players just all seem to vibe well together. He rolls his sleeves up, he does his job. Everybody comes on the pitch, they do their jobs. There's a lot less, Ghanaians complain a lot less about the Black Stars now than they used to before. So having done all the work to build the squad to this point, that must be one of the biggest considerations you have. Team cohesion, team chemistry. I'm not saying that by calling Caleb Hudson-Odoi or Edin Nketiah or any other player anywhere, Francis Amuzu or whoever, that it's going to change anything. I'm just saying that is also a factor to consider. But anybody that is eligible to play for the Black Stars, again, operative word, eligible, should be considered. We're going to the World Cup. It's the best of the best. We're going to meet the best of the best. We'll meet some Intom's teams too. Hopefully we get some in our group and we're able to qualify and make out of it. But in the event that we don't, then what? We want to put ourselves in the best possible position to go deep into the tournament, to do well and represent the country well. Like, if Blast has the first World Cup, if you the sleep safe, it's sweet. Even if then they give you light off safe, it's nice. If we want the cost safe, you know the mind like that. If Blast has when you the go work, you make cocoa tea for your car in back, your steering wheel in back, you give you the aircon, you know, you buy the cocoa safe, mama, and then they're too sitting for the aircon. And you know, that kind of vibe, there's a certain air in the atmosphere when Black Stars is doing well. And so we want to do everything possible and go as far and as deep in the World Cup as possible so that Ghanaians can be happy and proud of the team. And so I wouldn't say, oh, these people play to qualify, so let them, you know. But on the other hand too, you have to call it, you know, consider all the other factors I've listed before. So personally, my opinion is pretty simple. Consider everybody that is eligible to play for Ghana and pick the best possible squad. I know that we will have certain players in there for local content and economic content and those are there. But as far as the players that are being picked, the overwhelming majority are actually there to do a good job and they are the best possible we can find. I don't mind a couple of these ones to be mixed together. Do you get? So everybody that is eligible to play for Ghana should be considered. That one, I'll say it's only fair. But whether they actually get a call up or not, well, it depends on the authorities. It depends on how Ghanaians feel. Depends on the coach. I don't know.
So for me, the conversation has been very, I don't know, I feel like Ghanaians we tend to have a very, an overly emotional view of the Black Stars, which is understandable, but it gets emotional to the point where it goes beyond logic. Because now I've seen, you see conversations like, for example, if you don't play the qualifiers, you know for come the World Cup, they know for consider you for the World Cup.
Quality somebody that play the qualifiers gets hurt. Then what?
I don't think there's any footballing nation, there's any serious footballing nation that even considers this angle. Because even, let's say, England, for example, if right now Harry Kane lose form before the World Cup and he goes on a goal drought for the rest of the season, he doesn't get angle. He doesn't score. His place is going to be in jeopardy. Here's the thing. Let me make a finish.
Make a point, sorry.
Let's say Harry Kane goes off form the rest of the season. He doesn't score any goals. And then, say, another striker, some hot superstar striker, like, just comes
to Delap.
Scoring goals. Delap. Some Delap is just scoring left and right. He scores maybe, say, 30 goals between now and the end of the season. It's very likely that even if Harry Kane goes, he might even lose his place in the starting 11. Because that's just how these teams operate. It's like nobody has a set place in the team. Unless the coach is somebody who says that, okay, these are my people. You have a Deschamps or something who says, these are my people. These are the people I trust regardless. They are going to go. But in almost every high-performing team, everybody is always fighting for their position. The goalkeeper doesn't have a set position. The midfielders, the defenders, everybody's at every point in time fighting for their position. So there's a reason why at some point this guy is always starting. After a few games, maybe he goes off form or something, then go drop him. Jadon Sancho was starting England games how many years ago? After he joined Man United, he's barely sniffed a place in the national team again. That's just how teams operate at that level. So for me, when people say, if you know play the qualifiers, you know, for like, for me, that angle, it has never really made sense to me, because if you are not going to the World Cup as a family, you are going to the World Cup to go and compete. So at every point in time, you should be considering your best possible options. I'm not saying, if anything, me, my problem would be that I think some Ghanaians have this idea that, okay, if this person, they come from this country, he's better than what we have. In fact, over the past weekend, I don't know whether it was on Sporty FM or something, there was this guy who was talking about this situation, and he was saying that Nketiah and Hudson-Odoi, they are better than anything we have in the national team right now.
That's a big lie, because if we want to talk about that, sorry, Smiley, for hijacking it. Look, I'm a Chelsea fan. I'm a big fan of Callum Hudson-Odoi. I live in Nottingham, right? So, also, I'm a Nottingham Forest fan, kind of. But, look, it's not true. It's not true. Let's not tell lies just to carry favor with people. It's not true. We can go to the World Cup perfectly without them too. And whatever happens, they wouldn't add 5% more to what we've got already. They won't. Let's call a spade and let's talk. Let's tell the truth. Sometimes I know that the guy, sometimes he just says things just to carry a reaction and whatnot, because, you know, yeah, be like that sometimes. But sometimes let's be serious. Let's be serious. They are not far better than anybody we've got or anything of the sort. They are good players that could be useful in certain scenarios and whatnot. But me, every day I look at Nketiah and I wonder, probably he should have made his mind up about England a long time ago. Look, he's England's under 21 record holder for goals scored. And what did England reward him with? A total of one cap for the Three Lions. One cap. So if you've been rewarded with one cap, it doesn't look like you are going to get any more opportunity to play for England. Bro, what do you do? It might not feel good, though, but you carry yourself boko, then you go where at least you go get some play. You go get some play. How long have we been chasing Carlo? Every December, we go talk, oh, maybe go come, then fiam, you know, we'll come.
But me, one of my problems with these things is that I feel like Ghanaians in general tend to like simplify or oversimplify the decision that these players have to make when it comes to playing for the Black Stars. Because I think they just put themselves, they just look at it from their own perspective. Like me, I grew up for some Medina where I did try jackpot to in the UK or US or something. So, like, if I day here where somebody offer me the chance, should I play for England or should I play for Ghana? How difficult would it be? Like, how difficult of a decision would it be? Because, like, I be Ghanaian, but, like, this be my second country. Like, I feel like, in general, they oversimplify the decision the players have to make. They don't see from the perspective that, like you're saying, Nketiah was born in England. All his friends are English. Like, everything he's ever known are related to England. He played for the England youth teams, probably under 10s, under 12s, under 15s. Like, he grew up in that system. If anything, his link to Ghana is just through his parents. Maybe every now and then he might come to Ghana for a vacation or something. But in the end, the decision is not as simple as it might seem to somebody who has not grown up there or who, like, it's not a simple decision that this guy, you just turned your back on Ghana and you went to choose the flashier country. Like, it's actually a very, very difficult decision, because most likely, even your mates that you grew up with, they are also in the England national team right now playing for them. you yourself, everything about you feels English. If they ask you, make you recite Ghana national anthem, if you don't know him. So it's a very, very difficult decision. If anything, you're just lucky that maybe you have a backup plan in that Ghana, you have a second country that if your first choice doesn't work out, then your second choice D. And for me, apart from all of that too, like, you should also understand that, like, even when players are choosing which country to play for and everything, like, even the environment and everything also comes into play. As we did right now, Ghana, if Accra Sports Stadium, we go play match for there, and the grass is looking even half decent, it's like a national discussion. Hey, Accra Sports Stadium, the grass, they look very nice. So, like, at our level, and you're saying that, like, a player who has a choice to play for us or to play for another country where all of these things just come naturally, it shouldn't be a difficult decision. Because even the type of pitches you play on can determine, like, your injury record, like, can determine, like, how you perform and everything. So it's like there are so many things to consider when you're looking at these things. Like, even you look at all the situations we've had in the past with Brazil, the World Cup in Brazil, where we had to fly money. Like, you don't hear these things when it comes to other countries. Like, there's so much disorganization that comes with playing for Ghana that is not as simple as, okay, do you want to play for the country of your heritage? Like, there's so many things that go into determining whether you play for the country. So it's not always a situation where, like, I feel like when you hear that a player has chosen to play for this country or that country, people like to attach maybe some form of malice to the decision, in that this guy, he mafia we, basically, in choosing to play for that country. But really, there's so much that goes into choosing to play for that country that it shouldn't just be written off that this guy turned his back on us. Like, and lastly, for me, I also have a problem with Ghanaians generally holding players to a higher standard than we hold ourselves to. Because, like, 99% of the people who they attack the players, say they go choose to play for England or whatever, if they offer you chance right now, make you denounce your Ghanaian passport, and they go offer you UK passport, or they go offer you US passport, I promise you, there's plenty of people grab that opportunity with both hands. And that's where I have a problem. Because you're talking about players who are mostly illiterate or half illiterate, like players who it was either football or then go day streets. Like, those are the two options. And you're holding them to standards that you are not going to hold yourself to. And that's where my problem is. Like, that is a more complicated decision than most people make it seem. So for me, like you said, it all comes down to, does this guy make us better? If he does, consider it. But I really don't like that line of argument where it's like, this guy no play qualifiers, so make you no consider him. Or this guy, he chose to play for this country, the country no choose him, so let's close the door to him. Like, it's a very, very complicated decision that you shouldn't look at completely emotionally. It should always come down to, does this guy improve us? Does this guy make us better? Does he have something that we don't already have? And that's why, if you ask me right now, Callum Hudson-Odoi, I would say that I don't really want it, because I feel like Ghana, we are very stacked on the wings. But if you ask me about Nketiah, it would be a more complicated decision for me, because Ghana, like, when it comes to strikers, we just don't produce good strikers. Like, since I started watching Ghana, the only reliable striker we've produced is Asamoah Gyan. We've produced so many strikers who they might perform for their clubs every now and then, but when it comes to the national team, something just happens. Abdul Majid Waris, I had so much faith in him. He came to the national team, nothing. There's so many other examples of that. So, like, for me, if I think that you have something that we might need, fine, I'm always open to it. But if not, then let's consider our better options. It just comes out to that. But Crack,
I just want to add one before Crack comes in. I just want to add one other thing that most people also miss, is that for dual nationals, yeah, there's always that feeling of not belonging anywhere. You go this side, then we use it for the other side, say, oh, so that be your side there. So we there, we know we your people. Cool, go there that side. You go that side, They go talk. They go talk. Them two. Then go talk. Say, no, be your people. Then they call you.
and you know, even and, to add to that, Ghanaians, we tend to scapegoat the dual nationals when things go bad. So if things gonna go well, suddenly it be this guy where he come.
This guy where he don't feel.
Also, who remembers that time when Ghana had Kwarase where we get Fatal Dauda? Where they say the defenders they prefer Fatal Dauda because Kwarase know they speak Ga, so they know they feel controlled. Like you know they feel communicate with the defenders. That feeling of not feeling part, like part of like the core team.
It's not be that then they tell me why I didn't say somebody that be why they do that be what they do. They feel organized and the defenders they like in communication better. Then they feel safe. Make a left hand for them.
Anyway, so Kirk, what do you make of this whole situation? Had Senodoy and Nketiah?
I quite agree with a lot of things Smiley have said. All right. I mean, I joined late. I was having internet issues, but I joined and I was hearing the part where people make it sound like it's an easy decision. And whether we like it or not, these two young boys were actually dubbed the future of three Lions. Right from the youth ranking, Oxenodwe was tagged as one of the best wingers coming out of the youth system and even in Chelsea. You understand? The boy was very, 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 very talented. Nketiah led the under-20s, right, in goal scoring and things. He was a wonder kid, but for some reasons, he only had one call-up in England. But then he was never really established as a number 9 starting striker for Arsenal and all. So, bro, he came in an era where he was competing with a lot of number 9s, right? If he was in an era where it was Danny Welbeck and all those people, he might have gotten a chance. But you come in with Harry Kane, Tony, the Aston Villa striker, what's his name?
Watkins.
Watkins and all of those things. Bro, you aren't going to get some to play. And it's not really his fault. He comes inside, banks for Arsenal, super sub, and all those things. Bro, the only time he was probably established was when he went on loan to, was it Leeds or something like that, where he was playing as a starting striker. Coming to us now, no, he went to Crystal Palace. Everybody thought, okay, this is a time, but he missed the beast in Mateta as well. But the few times he played, he did well. It wasn't like to the extent where, like, but mind you, he's only what, like, what, 26? Isn't he like 26 or so? Like, he's still
just
young.
Just 26.
He's not in his prime. He's still young. You understand? But I think we do overvalue ourselves, right? Because mind you, we go knocking on their doors. If you say you have pride, don't knock on anybody's door. That's my first one. If you come and knock on my door, I have a chance to treat you anyhow I want. Because UK. Let's not forget, let's not act as if we also don't know how the GFA and Ghanaians treat these players when they also come. How impatient we are. Like, I was going to talk about the Kwarase thing and you said it. Bro, they literally went to the coach and said that they can't communicate in local language because there's a gap. Are you mad? Walla court came. So now they were doing. And they weren't safe. He's shaking in pool, blah, blah, blah. We want it. And you had people, radio stations, people talking about that. Because Omuni and Omoji Ska, they are pushing their players. Let's not act as if we don't discard them when we don't need them again. These people don't have anybody that fights for them like that. You will have a local player, Wasan, but we cheer. They'll call him no matter what, even when he doesn't. Look, Inaki came. Inaki wasn't banging goals. See how the narrative changed on Inaki. Please, so did Quincy Ousa be a play any qualifiers for us before going to CAN 2008? Did Prince Watson play any qualifiers for us before going to 2010 World Cup?
What is a qualifier?
Did Inaki play any qualifiers?
Himself, how many qualifiers he played before the 2006 World Cup?
And minus, the reasons people are using to bash them isn't quite like sound to me. Right now, where we are, our talent level has gone up. I'm not going to lie. We have, this is for a long time in a while. Like even when Achu was playing for us well, Achu had gone to Newcastle. He was still hitting the ground, right? He was still inconsistent. He went to Turkey, right? This is the first time where we can mention four players in England that are on top of their game, that they are in the team. I remember the last time we can do that. Right? Ishaku, he's a bona fide starter for Leicester. You have Semenyo, one of the best players in the EPL. You have Kudus, another beast. You have Partey. I mean, Partey has moved from Arsenal, right? He's a starter in Villarreal, right? Jordan is the only one that is still... But then, we can actually mention players. Djiku.
Kamal Dean, right? Too, is also picking up at Kamal Atlanta.
Kamal Dean, picking up at... You understand? So, we don't need a player like Oxenodwe. Odwe. That's coach, you say. Odwe. For him, we don't need him. I don't even know why we are going to worry ourselves for that. Because we have Kamal D and Suleiman and this fucking three-back system this coach plays, which I don't like. Limiting our attackers. It's not utilizing our strength. I don't like it. So we have Kamal D and Ishaku over there on the bench. What do we need Odwe for? And another reason why I don't even want them or we should go for them is me personally. Otuado, Wabon. I don't want a situation where we'll go and bring these players and we'll come and say chemistry issues. We should have allowed the coach to use his players. So, of course, bringing this, he worried the chemistry. He did well to good and right. I went to bring players that are not his players. Hey, take this squad. Obombia, no excuse. People act as if like, look, me, I have said it. If my kid brother plays, they are dual citizens. If they decide to play for America, you think I'll tell them to come to Ghana? For what? You think I don't know how they treat players here? Why would I want that? The time that they were hitting their strides, that they were looking at being called up at England, when they were interviewing them, what should they say? Okay, they have no pride in the country where they were born. Oh, Sinyama. Like, people were bringing up interviews of them talking about it's been they've been looking forward to this call-up, blah, blah, blah. On Concorde. At that time, like, I don't get it. Like, bro, the guy was like, 21? That was like 21 or so. On Yede. Like, do you get it? Why should I even at that time look at, like, people, like, why don't we act like Africa? We have to fix our home and fix our problem before we look elsewhere. Like, there are so many issues when they come. They are so baffled. See Prince Boateng till now. I'm telling you that Prince Boateng, even though he came to ball and went to AC Milan, he still regrets coming to Ghana. Because when he listened to the, like, what happened in 2014 and things, that pain that they carry, when they listen to them, it's like, bro, like, shit. Even though he helped me, like, he did it for the nation, he did it for the people that, but deep down, the GFA, like our leader says, bro, it's so bad. Anytime they come and they are talking. So let's not act okay, if they don't come for Black Stars, their career is going to go. No. No. They are English. This guy can get to play in a Bournemouth or a lower team. He hits stride. He goes again. He will recall that back to England. This isn't a big deal. Obviously, if you tell me that Ghana is going for the World Cup, right now, I don't look like playing for Three Lions. I'll say my options are open. Kaminka Day. Like, what should I say? That, oh, I don't regard... No. I don't understand. Well, I'm not supporting the call-up for them. I just want this narrative to die, this thing to die. If you have pride, like the coach has said, I would rather keep this. That's fine. One last thing I'll say. We are in an era where we don't have proper strikers. If you watch the Ghana, you realize we don't have finishers. One thing about Nketiah is, Arsenal fans were hating Nketiah. That guy is dangerous, can score out of Nothing. If we have to go for one of the two, I'll take Nketiah. The guy is deadly, no matter what. He might waste chances, but that guy is deadly. He's clutch. I can have him and Inaki on the bench. I don't mind. If you start Jordan, they start. This formation limits us. This five back limits us a lot. Play your regular 4-2-3-1. Kudus on the right, Semenyo on the left. Jordan behind the striker, whatever. If you start Inaki, bring Getty out. Mind you, disclaimer, I'm not saying we should call them. I'm just saying if there's one person we can go for, let's go for Getty. Odwe, we have his type over there. He and Kamal Dimi, I don't know the difference. It's Brandon right now. It's only Brandon. That's what they used to insult Kamal Dimi. And they'll say they'll choose Odwe. But yeah, I don't see the difference like that. But all this talk about it look like, maybe they come up for that guy. They don't need you. Yeah, right now, if you come and call me for this, at this point, obviously say yes. But they're acting as if like they pick up the phone to call the GFA to say that, hey, I'm ready, call me. No, that's not the case. You've been knocking on their door, and it's not an easy decision. They have to look up so many things. We all know this. But my last advice to them is, if they also want us to believe, they should switch their nationality and wait after the tournament that we come for them. Honestly, because remember, this guy at the point said he won't play for Black Star, the defender. Right? What's his name?
Salisu.
Salisu said he wasn't going to play for Black Stars. Back and forth, Chimamichu, we called him, sir. He had an ass in 2022 World Cup. He was one of the worst defenders in the World Cup. For all you know, he might go that way for them to switch, come back later after the tournament. That's all I can say. But let's stop acting as if people are calling their names ungrateful. People are calling them all. Like, bro, like, what do you want them to say? Just don't call them, man. You have an option not to call them. You are the one still talking about it. You, sports minister, open your mouth to say that it's like the door is open. You, sports minister. Why did you have to say something like that? Coach said, Charlie, he doesn't see the need for that. Stick by that. Man, I don't want to give any Otuado any slight excuse for you. Because we're born. Me, this group that we... Why are people expecting like anything other than first would have been a disaster? Group way. We could have qualified without the coach, this group. This group said we shouldn't have dropped 1 point, said this group. So let's not act like the way they are moving to them is annoying to me, Charlie. Let me relax.
Also, one thing I would also say is that about the pride thing, we don't even have to make it about national pride or any of that. I think that's all part of how they make this whole situation very emotional and move it beyond the point of logic. Because even Spain waited how many years to finally call Laporte? Over, like, it was finally like 27 when he finally decided to play for Spain over France. Because he kept waiting for France to call him up. For some reason, the Champs say he no like him. So he kept waiting. Finally, he decided to go to Spain. And all that time, Spain kept going back to check whether he's not interested before finally decided to play for them. He was part of the Euro 2024 winning squad. So, like, it doesn't have to be a matter of pride. I think they also did something similar with Diego Costa. When they waited for him, he was also waiting for Brazil. I think Brazil never called him up. So, he finally chose to play for Spain. So, like, it's something that it's not just us who do it. Like, I think, I don't know whether it's our inferiority complex that makes us think that it's a matter of pride or something. But, like, the big countries also do it when there's an opportunity. I remember way back when Adnan Januzaj broke out for Man United, and there was a whole conversation about which countries he's eligible to play for. And at the time, he wasn't even eligible for England. But England were already having conversations that, okay, we're in 2014. By 2019, if he hasn't played for any of the other four countries that he's eligible for, and at the time it was Albania, Kosovo, Belgium, and some other countries, they were saying that if he hasn't played for all those other countries by that time he could be eligible for a UK passport, and then we could bring him in. England were willing to wait 5 years for a boy who was 17 or 18 years at the time, hoping that he no go play for anybody else, so that finally they go get him. Like, when you think that you have somebody who can improve you, you are willing to do what you have to do, because in the end, it's
they
all
make
about
they do like it be African, person... it be African team.
Yeah, like in the end, it's all about does this person improve us? Morocco recently they managed to pull Brahim Diaz because he was picking Spain over them. They waited. Finally, the guy said, okay, finally, me, I will play for Morocco. Like, it happens everywhere. It's not anything unusual for a player, like for a country to want to wait for a player who they think
can
improve.
This team, the girls find so no. With the World Cup, what be your name?
Cape Verde.
It's good.
Cape Verde. What be my strategy? They're not going to go around if you even visit the country. If you visit the country, they will tell you once you visit, you are qualified. What are they doing? Portuguese descent, other descent, like how many people be Cape Verdean? Do you get it? Once you get some small, they will go Division 1 for some league. You are playing active football. Charlie, we'll give you passport and things. You go play for we. You too, you go love play. People are doing all the life. Like, they are making it look like it be like some, like, Ghanaian. And look, tell me, 9 out of 10, most of the players that have come to play for Ghana, they've done well.
Yeah.
Most of the players that they've done well. If Naki said, we can't win, no score goals, he was still dangerous, helped our team. Christian Usabe played well in 2008. One of our best players, 2010, was Prince Wati. Without him, like, we don't go where we go. Let's Jiku. Not kid ourselves. Jiku, like, let's not kid ourselves. Let me like, not do like, all this thing, not be why? They are you then? They're not the option like they will play for France. Why would they do like, why would they do like it be some like only African thing where African pair they go chase player? It happens everywhere. It happens everywhere. Egypt, Tunisia, Morocco, it happens everywhere. Ivory Coast, it happens everywhere. But we don't do like it be we pay away. And as you said, it's about the quality of player. Will they improve you? If they will, why? I said right now, we don't get striker. In that case, self can make injury prone. Somebody will be Iron Man before he start playing for Ghana and I start hit. Agenda day be that.
Me, I tell you, say, when in doubt, it's old age. Just talk on. In the old age, they grow. Okay? Good. You just they grow. That'd be like,
But yeah, generally, like, I feel like we should be more open to these conversations than we are right now. It shouldn't be a matter of us against them or whatever it is that we've made it. The one that annoys me the most is the whole, if you don't play the qualifiers, then World Cup, make you no play. Like, it's not that. So, are you saying that? So, right now, if everybody, like, maybe half of the team that play the qualifiers, then lose form ahead of the World Cup. By force, because they play qualifiers, we hold them a neck. Like, they hold a neck, carry them all go.
World Cup 2006. How many players play the qualifiers? How many players? Which players them go the World Cup? Why would they do like, I mean, you see how many Dramani can play?
You see that they can play. You know like the fight, why? You know think they like, they like the cost trouble. You know like that, you know. Smiley, move on. Make you don't listen to move on.
Like, honestly, like, it's just something that we should just approach from a completely logical perspective.
That's all.
It not be family affair with the goal do for the World Cup. The World Cup, we are going there to compete. We are not going there to dish out cups to people as a reward for what they've done in the past.
Especially if you stop they talk that, you know. This is Ghana. You thought it not be family. Everything is a family affair.
It's not family where they take money from your family. Family where they take bribe the big four players.
If you go do funeral where you get contribution where you don't want to pay, nobody because you're paying you go sort them out, they make you will make you pay family contribution.
Mola, I'm going to also why we continue.
Everything with family affair, you can't tell them not to make it about like not to consider. That's exactly how you consider it.
It'd be so funny that the AFCON qualifiers was much tougher than the World Cup qualifiers.
Nobody
when we met proper teams. When we met when we met proper teams in the AFCON qualifiers, see the way we tire. See what Kwesi Appiah do we. This World Cup qualifier, we see the team. See the team today when our group is in. And our Jordan has this goals, number of goals, and I said, make you go miss proper defense, since they go do what they do. No? People forget that most of Jordan assists to be corner kick. It be corner kick. Most of the assists be corner kick.
Make you don't move to my captain.
No,
hey.
No. See, the reality go hit people, we go slap them. If they go meet real ballers for the World Cup, you they wait. Wait,
I
you go
I
see, wait now.
I saw a statistic that said, I think 50% or around 50% of the goals you scored in general in the qualifiers were from set pieces. So,
yes,
we have a problem.
That's why Jordan
open play.
Oh, that's where Jordan get most of his assists from. Set pieces. So, I don't know why people, they do like this thing, energy, boom. This one, like, why are we acting like, you know, be corner and things we they take get. So, me, Charlie, guy, whatever they go do, more grease to their elbow.
Anyway, we've come to the end of this episode. If you haven't done it already, please follow our social media pages. Twitter, Instagram, ATW Podcast GCR, TikTok, After the Whistle. Subscribe to the YouTube. And also, we are still on the other podcast platforms, Spotify, Apple, wherever you can find podcasts, we did it. So, and again, subscribe to the YouTube. We'll talk this to this. So, yeah. Anyway, tell you guys, we've had a very long episode, even though the final thing that will come out to not be as long as what we've been sitting here recording for. But yeah, Charlie, thank you for joining us, Crack Van Gelder. And as always, ATW dominates the conversation.